When I was a kid, I remember this commercial that used to come on TV. There are a series of commercials anyway, starring a guy named, I think you say it, Phil Rizzuto. Rizzuto, that's the rice, right? That's the food. It's probably not that. Whatever, he was a baseball player and retired. He was kind of an old guy at that point. But it was a commercial for this place called The Money Store. And I was watching these commercials as a kid, and I was like, The Money Store? Why would you go to a store to buy money? Isn't that kind of pointless? I mean, what is it, like you need quarters and you go give them a dollar and they give you quarters back? It's like, well, wait a minute, they don't make much money if they do that. So what's the point of the money store? I mean, you know, what's a store that's going to buy money? Well, you know, later on I figure out that what all this is about is that you do buy money. You can do that. And it was like, as a kid, I didn't understand that. But here's the thing. A lot of times in life, you need money up front to do something with, and you need somebody to give that money to you. And, you know, it's not the best thing to go around and ask your friends and, you know, hey, Ron, can I borrow a couple $1,000? And Ron's like, sure, Brent, no problem. Get it back whenever, it just doesn't work like that. So you have to go to places like banks or I guess a place like the money store, which I don't think exists anymore. But, you say, here's how much money I need. Here's how much money I make. Look, I've never missed any payments on credit cards and car payments and things like that. I have good credit. How much money are you willing to lend me? And then I'll pay you back over a certain amount of time. And not only will I pay you back the money that you owe me, but I'll also pay you back what's called interest. So they add some fees and some costs onto the idea of getting money up front. Now, this works out to be a great thing in a lot of ways, okay? That's the way that most of us are able. If you've bought a house, you have almost surely borrowed money in this way. And you've agreed to pay it back over a long time. The traditional, typical way to get a loan for a house is over 30 years, a fixed rate mortgage. And the rates are really low on those, but over 30 years, you'd be amazed at how much interest you end up spending. Even if you have an interest rate down in 3 or 4%, when you borrow money for a house, you actually end up paying them more money in interest than you do than the actual money that you bought. But here's the thing. Most of us would never be able to buy a house if it wasn't for this way of getting money up front and being able to pay it back over a long period of time. What we would do instead would be to save that money over 30 years, and then we could buy a house at the end of it. But that doesn't really help out a whole lot, does it? So there's some ways that it's a fantastic thing that we live in a world and in a culture where we are able, at times that we need it, to get money up front to be able to buy things that we need. The world has not worked that way for most of the world's history. And even in some parts of the world today, it doesn't work that way. It's very hard to get loans in a lot of parts of the world. The United States is definitely more prevalently using things like mortgages and consumer debt and things like that than most other countries. Now, I'm saying all that to let you know that there are some ways that that's a very good thing, but there are also a lot of ways that it can become a big, big problem. And that's really one of the things that our message touches on today. We've been going through the book of Proverbs today, which has to do with living a life of wisdom, avoiding the foolish problems that a lot of people fall into, and avoiding here's the way we said it even the first week, was avoiding the potholes and the pitfalls of life. Today, when we get to Proverbs chapter 6, we're talking about living in legal and financial peace. So how can we do that? And this first half of Proverbs chapter 6 gives us some important advice and wisdom about how to live and how to navigate these areas of life that have to do with debt and borrowing money and pledging security for other people. But not only that, but hard work. And later on, it gets into the importance of avoiding some criminal activity, and we'll talk about all those things this morning. But here's the thing that I want you to see is that we are entering the section of the book of Proverbs, really started last week and carrying on today, and we'll continue throughout part of the summer, where we are just going to talk about some different topics and themes in the book of Proverbs, different areas of life that a lot of people seem to stumble and trip up and get themselves into a lot of trouble, really make a mess of things. And the Bible has some incredibly important advice for us to living life well, to living life skillfully and avoiding these kinds of problems. You may say, well, you know, this is church. We're here to learn about Christ and what he has for us. What's the gospel got to do with all of those things? Well, we'll see some different ways that it is really, really important. But here's one of the things. Jesus said, I've come that they might have life and have it to the full, or have it more abundantly. God doesn't just care about your soul and where you go when you die, though that is by far the most important question about us. And have we received Christ as our Savior, and have we believed the gospel? But he also wants us to live a full life here, which means spiritually knowing Christ. It also means having fellowship with others, not doing things that are going to break friendships and family relationships, not doing things that are going to alienate us from other people in our community. All of these things, when we start to put them together in a big mixing pot and turn the mixer on and mix them all together, all of these things are actually going to end up being really important questions into how do we live life well, and how do we honor Christ with every area of our lives, and how do we the things that we do. So let's talk about Proverbs chapter 6 and see what wisdom is here for us. Thanks to Ron for reading this earlier, but let's read a little bit again, and I'll explain some of it as we go. Beginning in the first verse, my son, you remember Solomon is writing this for his sons, or for a son, or for his sons. These are the principles of life that he wants his children to follow. My son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, if you have shaken hands in pledge for a stranger, if you have been trapped by what you said, ensnared by the words of your mouth. Now, what's going on here? Because this is not exactly something that's terribly common. Some of you may not be real familiar with how this might work. This is similar to the idea of how you might co-sign a loan for somebody. This is the specific example that Solomon is giving here. Here's what happens. And I think when I hear it most commonly, it's when a young adult, maybe somebody in their late teens or early 20s, they want to buy a car, okay? And they don't have enough money to buy a car, so they want a loan, but they don't have very much credit. They don't have a credit report built up yet, so they need somebody to say, hey, I'm going to co-sign for this loan, somebody that has good credit, oftentimes a parent, and they say, I will co-sign for this loan, which basically to the person that's lending the money says, if the first person doesn't pay, if they don't have money and they default on their loan, then the backup person is going to come in and they're going to be held responsible for the loan and for that money. So if a teenager gets a loan for a car and their parent co-signs for it, the teenager does good for a couple months and they make their payments, but then they lose their job and they can't find the money and they stop making payments. Then suddenly the bank is knocking on their parents' door, not literally, but figuratively, phone calls and all that kind of stuff, saying, hello, we need money, and you agreed because you co-signed for that loan that you are going to pay. Now the parents don't have a car. They don't have anything for it. They just got themselves in a lot of trouble by co-signing for this loan. It can get you in a lot of trouble, and that's actually what Solomon is saying here, is don't put up your own pledge for somebody else, for your neighbor, if you have shaken hands and pledged for a stranger, because this can lead to a trap and a snare. This can lead to a way of being tripped up financially in your own life. So Solomon's advice is don't co-sign loans. Now, I'm not saying if you're a parent that you should never do that for a child. Remember, this is Proverbs is not a book about all these specific directions that you need to follow in every instance. This is a book of general principles. So in general, we're going to stay away from things like that, getting ourselves in debt, particularly when it's not even for our own selves. But look at what he says in verse 3. So do this, my son, if this happens to you, to free yourself. Since you have fallen into your neighbor's hands, go to the point of exhaustion. And give your neighbor no rest. Allow no sleep to come to your eyes, no slumber for your eyelids. Free yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the snare of the fowler. I mean, this is like if you see on Animal Planet when the lions are trying to attack the wildebeest or whatever, and he's trying everything to get away, and once in a while they actually manage to get away from the lion, and they take off running as fast as they can. That's the idea here of getting out of this bad situation as quickly as you can. of owing somebody money. And he says, if you need to go get a second job to do it, go work day and night until this debt is paid off so you are not in this kind of trouble of owing somebody a lot of money. Now, you'll notice here that their world works a little bit different than our world does, because when we need this, we go to a third party usually. We go to somebody we don't know at a bank, something like that, and that's where we get money from. Back then, they didn't have banks and that kind of thing, so they would go to their friends and neighbors, and that can really get into a lot of trouble. Well, I'm thankful that we don't normally have to function that way, but let's just give you an example. Let's say a water pipe at the house broke, and I had to pay a lot of money to fix it, and I was just really short on money this week, and I just went to Miss Aura, and I said, Miss Aura, we just had a really rough week this week, and I could really use some money. Can I borrow $500, Miss Aura? And she may say, this is an example, she may say, I wouldn't be able to do that anyway if you wanted to, but we're just using an example, right? So Miss Aura is like, sure, Brent, I like you, I trust you, here's $500, we work it out, so I'm going to pay her back $100 a week, and then after 5 weeks I'll have her paid back, right? So she's not charging me interest, because the Bible says don't charge interest to fellow Israelites. So that's a principle. You're not taking advantage of somebody that's in a bad situation. She just says, just pay me back the $500. And then a week goes by, and I pay her the first $100. And the second week goes by, I pay her the second $100. It's back up to $200. I've paid her back now. But then the third week, and like money's really tight again, and I get a flat tire, and I got to fix that. And like I'm like, I know I got to pay Miss Aura back. And then I see her at church. And I'm like, I probably tell her, things get a little bit awkward between us. Suddenly, like the next week, if I can't pay her, then I see her over on the other side of the fellowship hall, and I'm like ducking, and I'm trying to walk out of the room. And suddenly things are getting awkward real quick in a personal relationship where you owe money to each other. And this is one of the reasons that this culture in particular, and many other cultures in the world, it would be an even worse thing to borrow money from somebody, because you have this strange relationship dynamic when you owe somebody else money, somebody that you're friends with or family with. It's just not healthy. It can destroy relationships very easily. It's a pitfall that a lot of people fall into. So I'm thankful that we're not in a situation where we're normally borrowing money from each other, but debt can still be a huge, huge problem for us. A lot of people can get themselves into a lot of trouble with that. In fact, Proverbs has some different advice on this particular issue, and I wanted to show you. As we go through these themes in the book of Proverbs, I'm going to jump around a little bit and pull some different Proverbs out so we don't have to all turn together, and it would just take up some time. But here's Proverbs 22, verses 26 and 27. Here's what it says in these verses. Do not be one who shakes hands in pledge or puts up security for debts. That's the co-signing like we talked about earlier. If you lack the means to pay, your very bed will be snatched from under you. So, I mean, you can get into some real trouble. You could lose your house. You could lose your place to sleep. You can lose friends, family that are not going to speak to you anymore. A lot of trouble can come if you get into owing people a lot of money. Here's another one, Proverbs 22:7. The rich rule over the poor, a general principle of life, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. The borrower is slave to the lender. Now, we think about it as an advantage to be able to go get a loan, for example, to buy a house. But here's an important perspective that the Bible offers that we really ought to realize, is that when we borrow money from someone, when we owe somebody money, there becomes not just a friend one to another relationship. There becomes a relationship where the Bible's comparing it slave to master in that situation. You say, well, that's a little bit harsh. Is it really like that? Well, think about it like this. Let's say you have a house payment that's around 25% of your monthly income. And that's kind of what I hear Dave Ramsey say is kind of a standard house payment, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong a little bit on the figures, but let's just say that, 25%. So 25% of your paycheck every month is going to pay the bank for your house. And that's a good thing to be. But think about this. The first week of every month, you're not even working for yourself. You're not even earning any money for yourself. You're working for the bank for that first week. And that's how it works. When you owe somebody money, you're working for the people you owe the money for. You're not working for yourself. You've already got the stuff. It's all deteriorating, your car's rusting, it's getting more miles on it. The bank's just collecting their money at this point. Borrower is slave to the lender. That's why the book of Proverbs is really strongly advising us to avoid situations where we're borrowing money. Now, we live in a culture where borrowing money is a way of life. And like I said earlier, with the way you buy a house, it actually ends up being a huge blessing that you can get loans for some things in certain circumstances and use that to your advantage to build wealth and to own a home and all these kinds of things. So I don't think the book of Proverbs or anywhere in the Bible is telling us that we should never take out loans or never borrow money or anything. But it does tell us that we should repay it quickly, that we should avoid oppressive debt, so that basically everything we're doing, every paycheck we get is basically going to pay our debt payments off credit cards, car loans, student loans, things like that. We really need to be careful about that. Now, back in the U.S. News and World Report, I gave some figures about people with a credit report. So this is not everybody. Obviously, children, people that are young, I believe under 18, you don't have a credit report. This is just people that have a credit report. So they're over 18 and they have some form of credit. The average person with a credit report owes $16,635 in consumer debt in the United States. Now, that includes credit cards, car loans, and student loans, and any other forms of debt. It does not include mortgages. Okay, mortgages are not considered consumer debt by these figures. $16,635. The average income in the United States is somewhere between $50,000 and $55,000. So if the average person just decided, you know what, I'm not going to spend money on anything except just getting myself out of debt, most people would have to work 2, 3, or 4 months of the year paying nothing but their debt off before their debt would be completely paid off. That's kind of eye-opening, isn't it? I mean, we understand, and hopefully those people that have gone into debt have done it with their eyes open. They understand what kind of payments they can afford and things like that. Man, but a lot of people don't. A lot of people get into trouble really, really quick. The average college student graduates college with $2,000 in credit card debt. When you are young, particularly, you've got to be really, really careful, because when you go to college, I remember when I was in college, we'd go into the cafeteria, eat lunch, and there would be banks with tables set up as you walked in the lunchroom. Hey, we'll give you a credit card. Come over here and sign up for it. And it's a low credit, you know, low limit on it and everything. But they know how many students are going to run up credit card debt, and every month they're paying interest, interest, interest. They're paying very little on the actual debt that they owe. They're just paying interest every month. Banks are getting rich. You're getting poor. You're just getting yourself into trouble. And it's not just young people that do it. So that's why we see these $16,000 per credit report numbers. The Bible really encourages the idea of repaying quickly, and not only that, but saving up versus immediate gratification. So instead of getting what you want and then paying it off, as you are able to, let me recommend to you the idea of saving up money and waiting until you can buy something and pay for it in full without going into debt to get it. That would be a hugely important and good step, especially if you're somebody who knows you've gotten yourself in trouble financially before. Now, looking at the other side of it, the Bible has some other advice too when it talks about you being the lender to someone else. Number one, it says that fellow Israelites shouldn't take advantage of one another by charging interest. But it also says, here's Proverbs 11:24, one person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. And this is the idea of generosity. So here's the thing. If somebody actually were to come to you and say, I need some money. I'm in trouble. I can't pay my electric bill this month. The Bible is actually recommending a situation where if you are able to help them, to go ahead and give them the money and say, look, I'm paying this for you. You don't have to pay me back. You don't owe me anything. I'm not putting you into debt. I'm not doing those kind of things. If you feel the need to help somebody, is to just go ahead and be generous and give that to them. I'm not saying this is a universal principle. I'm not saying never lend somebody money where they would pay you back. But this is the picture that the Bible recommends to us. How does this fit in with with the gospel. It really, it helps us to see the next one as well. So let's look at the first two together, and then I want to bring it back around to what, how this really helps us in our lives. So here's the second point today, is that hard work, self-motivated hard work pays off. And we see this in verses 6 through 11. So look down here with me. Go to the ant, you sluggard. He's being a little sarcastic here. Go to the ant, you sluggard. A sluggard is somebody that's lazy. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? He's, in other words, the guy's sleeping in. He won't wake up in the morning. He's 8, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning, even later. He's just laying there. He's relaxing. Verse 10, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. You know, he's got his hands folded, kicked back on the lazy boy with his feet up, you know, with a TV on, half fallen asleep. He's taking it easy. Verse 11, and poverty will come on you like a thief, scarcity like an armed man. So he's using some comedy here. He's saying, don't be lazy. You need to get out and you need to work hard. You need to take it upon yourself that I'm going to be somebody that's going to go out and I'm going to earn the things that I and my family need in this situation. I'm going to be like the ant who's working hard. It doesn't matter if you have a commander, a boss, or an overseer or ruler over you. I mean, think about this. You know the world that we live in. Some people go and do their job just to get by. They do as little as they can so that they don't get fired. They collect a paycheck. They go home and try to forget about it. Think about if you took the approach of the ant here that's being described. You go to work. You're there a couple minutes early. You don't wait for your boss to give you instructions. You know what's got to be done, so you go ahead and you do it. Not only do you do it what needs to be done, you do a fantastic job. You excel at your work and completing the tasks that are assigned to you. You do it even better than your boss expects you to. You're not complaining, always calling in sick, these kinds of things. You go to work and you do those kind of things, then most of the time, general principles, again, we're in Proverbs, right? Most of the time, your boss, the people around you are going to notice that and they're going to reward that by giving you promotions, giving you raises. You're going to do better and better. They're not going to let you go when it's time, when business is not going well and they got to fire some people. It's not going to be you that they let go. It's going to be the people that are just trying to barely get by, the people that are sleeping in, hitting the snooze button, always 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour late to work when they're supposed to be there if they haven't gotten fired already. And that's exactly what's being described here in the book of Proverbs. It has no commander, no overseer ruler, and that's what the ant does. The ant doesn't have an ant boss that's over there yelling, hey, ant, go pick up that rock and go carry it over here to build our ant hill. It just does it. I don't know how it knows to do that, but that's what they do. And that's what the book of Proverbs is recommending for us, that we would know what needs to be done and we would just get out and do it. We're not going to lay there in our beds. Analogy from Greg's announcements this morning. He was telling us that he didn't want to come out early to the garage sale. And I'm kind of the same way because I'm not a morning person particularly. Back in college and seminary, I used to schedule my classes late in the day so I could sleep in later. I like to stay up late at night if it's just me on my schedule. But here's what was happening in our house was I usually try to get into the office at 8 o'clock in the morning, so I would get up about 7 or a little after. That was about the amount of time that I needed to get ready and be here and that kind of thing. Sarah was getting up at about 6 o'clock to get herself ready and get the boys some breakfast and get them dressed and everything. And what I started to notice was that it was really, really hard on Sarah. I was getting up in enough time to get myself ready, but it was really wearing on her. And, you know, it was just, to be honest, it was just me being lazy and not wanting to get up at 6. I wanted to sleep till 7. And I just had to get to the point where I realized, you know what, Brent, you are just being a selfish jerk. Quit hitting the snooze button and wake up in time. So I set the alarm to get up about 6, a little bit after, and I get myself ready by 7. Then we get the boys up, then we get them some food, and then after that, I'm free to get them dressed and get them ready to go out the door to help Sarah out. And that's really what I should have been doing all along, and I shouldn't have put that responsibility on her. And that's what makes me think about when I see this passage about don't just get up and do what you need to do. You don't have to tell me how easy to just push the snooze button. I'll do it a long time. But at some point it comes time to grow up and take responsibility for what you're supposed to do. And that's what the book of Proverbs is recommending here. Let me show you a few verses. Proverbs 10 verses 4 and 5. Lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. He who gathers crops in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. Now, they are living in a culture where farming is taking place, and this is really, really important for them because they only have a short window to gather their crops and to store them properly, or they lose what they've worked all year for. And I saw this when I was living out in North Carolina in farming country. When it was harvest time, farmers were working till 10, 11 o'clock at night. If they had lights on their tractor, they were getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning, and they worked all day long harvesting crops. Now, there were other times of the year when their schedule was a lot lighter and things like that. And by the way, this is not saying that all people who work hard get rich and all poor people are lazy. This is not saying that. Don't read the Bible to say this. The book of Proverbs is a book of general principles. There are plenty of people that work really, really hard all of their lives, and they never have much money to show for it. And then there are other people that are filthy rich, and they are some of the laziest people you could meet. The book of Proverbs does not deny that there are exceptions to these things. But in general, people that work hard and willing to wake up early to do what it takes to excel at their job, they are generally going to do well. And people that are lazy and don't, they're generally not going to do well. So that's what the book of Proverbs is doing. It's setting us up. How are the ways that we can live well and do well in life and avoid these pitfalls? So Proverbs 12:11, those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense. You know, I mean, this is a good thing to point out about our culture, because our culture is all about, oh, you need to follow your dreams and do whatever you want to do. But this says those who chase fantasies have no sense. I mean, as the famous Napoleon Dynamite once said, Pedro, just listen to your heart. That's what I do. That may not be the best advice. Sometimes it's time to come back to reality and come back to earth and say, you know what? I'm going to go out and work hard during the day, and I'm going to chase my dreams at night when I've got some time to do it. I'm going to make sure my family and myself are provided for financially the way that we need to be. And then if I've got another dream I want to chase, then okay, I'll do it on my free time. So some good advice here in the book of Proverbs. Here's one more that I want to tell you. This one was a little bit longer, and it's hilarious. So you've got to turn there with me. Proverbs 23, I believe, 26. There we go. Turn back to Proverbs 26. This is the picture. This is the book of Proverbs mocking somebody that's lazy. Okay, it's really funny. Proverbs 26, starting in verse 13. Look at verse 13. Okay, now, this is also ancient humor, so you have to understand that. Okay, it may not seem really funny to you the first time you read it, but think about what he's saying. Proverbs 26:13. A sluggard says, there's a lion in the road, a fierce lion roaming the streets. And you're like, well, what does that verse mean? Well, I mean, if there is a lion in the streets, well, let's let people know about it and stay away from it, right? I mean, that's what would make sense, but that's not what's going on here at all. There's not really a lion roaming the streets. That's just the lazy guy's excuse for staying home from work. He's saying, oh, look what could happen. If I go out of my house, I could get eaten by a lion. I'm just going to stay here and not do any work. He's just making up these dumb excuses for not providing for himself and for his family. The sluggard said, there's a lion in the road. I can't go out today. A fierce lion roaming the streets. He's using satire here, so keep that in mind. Verse 14, as a door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns on his bed. You picture the door opening and closing. You know what the hinge does. It just sits there and turns all day long. And that's what the slugger does. He lays in his bed and he turns over. And then he hits the snooze button and he turns over again. Turns over and over and over again in his bed. Never wakes up, never gets up. So here's the next verse, 15. A sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He is too lazy to bring it back to his mouth. Okay? So they don't use spoons and forks like we do. They dip their hand in the bowl, pick up the food, and bring it back. But this guy is so lazy. He's laying on the couch with his bowl of chips, and his hand just falls in the bowl, and he's too lazy to even bring the chips up to his mouth. That's the idea here. Verse 16, a sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven people who answer discreetly. And that's where the comedy kind of ends, and he gets to the point. He says the lazy person, they actually look at themselves as pretty wise in their own minds. They're like, look at all those other fools out there working hard, wasting their lives at their jobs, earning money, cutting their grass, trying to make their yards look nice. Look, I'm just relaxing here on the couch with my hand in a bowl of chips. Look how smart I am. Look at all those other fools out there. And the Bible says that it is much, much better to be someone who is working hard and making sure your financial needs are being provided for than it is to just sit back and relax and enjoy life. You know, I mean, if you get to retire when you're older, there may be a time for those kind of things. But even better, spend your retirement doing things like ministry and service to others, not just relaxing. There's time for relaxing. There's nothing wrong with relaxing at the right time. But when that starts to take over your life, then, let's use some wisdom here. That's what the book of Proverbs is calling us to. So here's how I want to wrap this up. We're not going to get to our last section today, and that's okay. What is this picture of a person, a group of people, even a church, who's avoiding debt, who's avoiding being entangled in all these financial problems, who's hard at work providing for themselves and their family? Maybe some are wealthy, maybe some are not wealthy, some are just average middle class, some people may be poor, but we're all together living this ideal that the book of Proverbs is laying out in wisdom. And we are able to give generously when there are fellow church members that are in financial trouble. Hopefully not because they haven't been living foolishly, but, you know, things happen. Water pipes break, car tires go flat, things like that. We understand that things like that happen. Then suddenly, you know what? I don't have huge debt payments that I've got to make every month, and I'm working hard at my job, and I'm bringing home a decent paycheck. And suddenly, when I see my neighbor, my friend, my fellow church member that needs some money, I've got some margin. I've got some headroom that I can say, you know what? I'm able to help here. You know what? Our church, we need to pay light bills and water bills, and we need to send mission teams to Lithuania, and we need to send youth to youth camp this summer to Infuge. And there are financial needs here, there, and everywhere. And you know what? I'm not strapped for cash all the time. I'm working hard, I'm staying out of debt, and I have freedom to be generous the way the Bible is recommending and calling me to. Financial stress is one of the leading causes of marital problems. Think about a church full of people that are remaining free from these financial entanglements. And because of that, their marriages are more healthy. They're better able to reflect the love of God to the world around them. You're not living life through constant stress of financial problems. What we have here is, in actuality, a great picture of what the church could be if we would all together live in wisdom. A group of people who can dedicate ourselves to working hard, to being good employees, to being good employers, if that's the circumstance you're in. You're able to be generous and to give away things and not think about yourself because the lifestyle that you're living is well within your means. If the church could live in this way, it would be a great testimony to the world around us that this world is not our treasure. We are not making idols out of the houses we own and the cars we drive and the gadgets we you know, our cell phones and all the stuff we can spend money on that rusts in a couple years. It's all out of date anyway. That's not our God. That's not our idol. We love people and we love God, and we're seeking His kingdom first and His priorities, even in our finances. It would be a powerful, powerful picture of God's work in the gospel in conforming us to the image of Christ. Do you think Jesus owed people money? Do you think He was always trying to, oh, hold on, Peter. I know you paid for lunch last time, but I forgot my wallet this time. Jesus was multiplying fish and bread. He was providing for everybody else. He remained completely unencumbered so that He could provide a sacrifice. And most importantly, He wasn't in debt one bit to God the way that all of us are because of our sin. That's exactly the thing that enabled Him to be the perfect sinless sacrifice. If Jesus had been in debt for sin, His death could have only been for Himself. That's the state all of us are in. But Jesus owed God nothing on the cross. So He said, you know what? They've got a debt. I'm going to pay their debt out of my generosity, out of my love, out of my grace, and out of my mercy. Jesus is the epitome of the generous person who stays out of debt, who doesn't owe anybody else anything. And because of that, He's able to lavish love and grace on those around Him. Shouldn't we imitate Him? Let's pray together. Father, we thank You so much for this message of wisdom out of Your word today. God, and I pray that everyone here is ready and willing to heed these words. God, not that we have specific advice for all these individual financial situations that people find themselves in today. And that's not our purpose here today. I pray that that hasn't been the message that has come across as I've preached, but that You would turn our mindset into one of using the finances that You have blessed us with wisely, that You would help us to stay unencumbered and live lives of generosity and love toward others. And most of all, that we would turn our lives toward Christ, toward the gospel, because He is everything to us. And we ask these things this morning in Jesus' name. Amen.